Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, your podcast hostess. And this week, my friends, well, you know what they say about best laid plans? They're just that. Plans. I had an interview all lined up, but folks, I flipped the script. You know why? Because it's my birthday, that's why. So this week, instead of talking about tools and EDA and the like, we'll get to that in due time. We're diving into one of my all-time favorite subjects, wearable technology. I am a sucker for just about everything MEMS related. So let me bring in the one, the only, Dr. Stephen LaBeouf from Valencel. We're talking about accuracy in wearables. Yes, and Apple Watch, I was actually on that treadmill for 45 minutes this morning, not 35 like you claim. Oh, sorry. Inside voice. Check it out. Hi, Stephen. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hello. Good to speak with you again.
Thank you so much for joining me again, Stephen. So one of the biggest markets in all of EE today is IoT, and more specifically, wearable technology. So what do you think are the biggest forces driving this market?
Well, I think it's a confluence of a number of things. One of them is there's a general desire, and growing desire, that has become material in the consumer space, where people want to know more about their health and ways they can improve it personally. So what kind of specific things can they do unique to their bodies in order to improve themselves? And what is their health status? Part of this could be because of the fact that the population in general across the planet is aging, and so people have more concerns. Part of it could also be because of growing bodies of research and education people have had about the importance of their life choices and how it impacts the future. A number of things could be responsible for this particular new growth in interest in improving health, but it's there, and it's there not just in the U.S., but across the globe. Another thing is that there is a greater interest in technology amongst people and in wearable technology. So when you combine the fact that people are interested in improving their health, improving their fitness, and finding ways to uniquely improve their lives with their life choices, combining that with the more ready adoption and greater interest and proliferation of wearable electronics, that those two factors combined together really help drive this marketplace. And so what we're seeing is the big river formed at the confluence of those two things, I feel.
So you guys recently did a consumer survey on wearable technology. Can you share with us any insights, cool stuff that you learned from that survey?
Yes. You know, this survey was performed with hundreds of participants. And these participants were gathered from people who are using technology on a regular basis already, because it was an internet survey. We had partners help us with the survey. For example, the MEMS and Sensor Industry Group helped us, and there were, I want to say, 706 or a little over 700 U.S. consumers that were addressed in the survey, ages 18 to 65. And what was interesting is that there is a problem that was kind of identified from the survey, and that is that a lot of the wearables in the marketplace today, it's important that people believe that they are accurate, because if people don't believe those wearables are accurate, they lose interest in the devices, or they have no interest in buying them at all. And sometimes people don't discover how inaccurate the devices can be until they use them for a while. And then one out of three of people who have dropped their wearable or quit using it, they say that part of that was because the data wasn't accurate enough. And so what's interesting is that how accuracy was a big key to people owning and wanting to buy the devices. Like, for example, I want to say somewhere around 80% of the wearable owners had said that a wearable had positively affected their health in some way. And then a little over 70% of the wearable technology owners believe that at some point the technology would have a direct impact on their health as long as the sensor technology were accurate. And then of the people who hadn't owned a wearable device, more than 70% of those people said that they would actually consider buying one if they believed the accuracy were good enough to help manage their health. They clearly did not believe that the accuracy was good enough to manage their health, and health would be a big factor in them owning the wearable. So they had kind of looked at activity tracking as different from, you know, managing your health. I tell you, one of the things that got me from the survey in particular was we had asked people how often did they want to wear their wearable device. So did they want to wear their wearable 24/7? Did they want to wear it only during exercise? Or did they want to wear it only during the day and not during the evening? I had expected that probably 75% of people who were interested in wearables would want to wear a wearable 24/7, and that the rest of that, so you know, maybe 25, maybe 30%, they would be interested in a sport wearable only, and so not to wear 24/7. But it turned out that half of the people said that they would not want to wear the wearable when they sleep. And of that half, roughly 60% of those said that they wanted to wear a wearable that they wore all day but not during the evening, and the rest said that they wanted a sport wearable. So what was interesting is that a lot of people don't want to wear a wearable when they sleep. And the reason why this is important to know for designers is there are a lot of different design rules that are important for you to consider if you're going to make a wearable you wear when you sleep. And those design rules do not exist in, say, a smartwatch. It's not a concern in a smartwatch. You know, people don't want to, say, go to bed with those. So when you're designing these wearables, you don't need to go through the effort of trying to make these satisfy the sleep case for at least half of the population, because half of the population doesn't care. Now, that said, another half of the population cares a whole lot. So it really portends to the manufacturers who are making wearables in jewelry and fashion, where people often take those off when they sleep. There's a big opportunity for those folks to focus on daytime wear and, you know, use their talents towards that end. How do you make a daytime wearable really exciting and interesting throughout the day without having to worry about sleeping with it?
So, Stephen, what do you think are the biggest challenges we're facing as the wearable market continues to expand?
Well, one of the problems is going to be the insights. And what I mean is, one of the reasons why people discontinued their wearable devices is it was too much of a hassle to recharge. And that was the top reason given by people in our survey. So 40% of the people who had discontinued their wearable said it was just too much of a hassle to recharge. And about 30% said it wasn't accurate enough, or that it was uncomfortable enough, or that it just didn't provide continually interesting insights. I call this death by discharge. People buy a wearable device. They are all excited by it in the first, you know, week, and then they have to recharge it. And when they recharge it, they forget about it. And then they go, oh, my God, yeah, it's recharging. I need to put that thing back on. They put it on, and it doesn't tell them anything interesting that they didn't learn in the first week. And so there needs to be continually interesting insights in order to keep people captivated with the devices if they're using them primarily for health and fitness functionality. And those use cases haven't been shown to be in the marketplace yet. Our company is helping people realize what those use cases are. But another challenge is that if you don't have accurate sensor technology, you can't generate those use cases because it's garbage in, garbage out. The assessment ends up being nonsensical because the sensor data isn't correct. And so I think one of the reasons why those insights haven't been implemented is the vast majority of wearable devices today don't have all the metrics measured that are needed, measured accurately enough in order to provide those models with useful information for generating some kind of health assessment.
So, where do you see wearable technology headed in the future?
Well, I do see a lot of diversity happening in the wearables sector. Now, that wasn't quite called out from this survey, but we've seen, you know, as one of the leading licensors in the marketplace of sensor technology for wearables, Valencell has seen a number of form factors come to be studied by our partners, not just wrist-worn wearables, earbuds, armbands, clothing, jewelry, other types of wearable form factors, rings and necklaces, and people are integrating technology into. And so I see that there'll be a lot more diversity in form factors, a lot more niches being filled. And I think that you're going to be really interested in how these wearables are used to connect the dots between some of these more fitness-oriented metrics and health, how we take this fitness information we've been collecting and turn that into health assessments that can predict health outcomes for people. I'll give you an example. We have a technology we're licensing out to folks now that measures the time between heartbeats called RR interval. That's the technical nerdy name for it. It's the time between these R peaks in the heart rate waveform. And when you do statistics on those heart peaks, that those time intervals over the course of 2 or 5 minutes, you get these interesting assessments, and they can be used in fitness to let you know if you're fatigued or if you need to quit exercising so hard. They can be used in wellness to help you know if you're stressed and what the origin of your stress is. But it turns out that same technology can be used to detect if you have atrial fib or if you have arrhythmia or if you're at risk of a cardiac event. And so the same technology that we can use for these fitness aspects can be process to generate real important health aspects. So you're going to see the marketplace start to adopt these technologies that were designed originally for wearable fitness use cases, applying those towards health use cases.
All right, Stephen, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, wait, you ran for Congress? Tell me about that experience.
Oh, yes, I did. I ran for Congress back in 2000 against Richard Burr in North Carolina. He was a Republican. I was running as an independent. The Democrat dropped out, and so it ended up being just me and Richard Burr. Now, of course, I lost. I knew I wasn't going to win. I was in grad school at the time, and I was finishing my thesis, and I was a freelance cartoonist at the time and also writing for various papers and journals. I had a lot going on, but I wanted to get some good ideas out, and a lot of the ideas that I got out have been in the political sphere today. And so I feel that we came a long way with seeding ideas that got adopted into the public policy, even though I didn't win. So I feel like, you know, yeah, maybe I lost the battle, but I won the war.
I love that. Well, Stephen, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me once again. It is always great to have you on my show.
Oh, it's a pleasure speaking with you, Amelia. You have a good one now.
Speaking of memes, you know what time it is? It is time to submit your entry for this year's MEMS and Sensors Technology Showcase at this year's MEMS Executive Congress. What if you could show off your startup's MEMS or sensor-enabled product to a room full of venture capitalists, MEMS dignitaries, distinguished members of the press, including me? And what if that room full of people was located in Scottsdale, Arizona? Yes, my friends, this could be yours and more. Because if you're picked as a finalist in this showcase, you'll probably get to be on my show, too. Hey! Anyway, I would highly recommend any and all of my audience who is working on a MEMS or sensor-related device to submit your product design to the MEMS Executive Congress right away. And hey, if you want to do that thing right now, just click the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. And I've also included a link for more information about the MEMS Executive Congress as well. One of my all-time favorite events every year. I hope to see you there. You know what else your MEMS enhanced device may need? Some kind of analog interface to the outside world. I know, wouldn't it be nice if digital made the world go round? Well, it would also be nice if all of the members on your team could use the same analog tools. Well, my friends, if this sounds like a struggle you've had in the past, and probably will have in the future, let me introduce you to the most recent episode of Chalk Talk to hit the virtual airwaves, Introduction to the New Virtuoso ADE Product Suite. In this episode of Chalk Talk, I sit down with Steve Lewis of Cadence Design Systems and chat all about the new capabilities in Cadence's Virtuoso ADE Product Suite. Capabilities that will make everyone on your team happy. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, by heading on over to YouTube, keyword eejournal, or by navigating on over to the on-demand section of eejournal.com. And as a side note, Steve Lewis may be the best Chalk Talk speaker we've ever had, so if you need a little more incentive to check out this episode. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EEJournal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can grab our Fish Frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of August 12th, 2016, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.